Hey, Sally, would you like to get started?
Sure. Thanks, John. We are ready to begin. I'm Sally Caputo, Director of Operations and Programming for the Association of Management Consulting Firms, known as ANCF, and we'd like to welcome you to our webinar, What to Expect During Your First Year in Consulting. This webinar is brought to you by the Consulting Career Connection ANCF University Program. Before we get started, please be aware that we welcome you to ask questions throughout the webinar, and you may do so by using the chat function on your screen. We'll pause from time to time to answer questions in the order in which they are received, and then we'll take some at the end as long as time allows. In addition, we'll have several polling questions throughout our presentation for you to answer, and you'll see that they require a simple mouse click to complete, and your answers will remain anonymous. But with that, I'd like to turn it over to John Firth, who's the President and CEO of ANCF, and John's going to provide a little background about the association and our university program, and then introduce our speakers. So over to you, John.
Thank you, Sally. As Sally said, I am the President and CEO of AMCF, and we are the Global Trade Association representing the management consulting industry. And our mission is to promote an environment which fosters the success of management consulting firms and the value they deliver to clients. We speak with a collective voice, and we promote knowledge exchange and professional standards for the community of management consulting firms. A very important aspect of the work we do here is promoting the value of a career in consulting for students. And this is our university program called the Consulting Career Connection, as Sally mentioned, which is an information hub and a forum to learn, interact, and collaborate. We hold about 6 or 7 webinars every year on a variety of topics, and those are very well attended by students across the United States and in some foreign countries. And we really try to address all the interests and concerns of undergraduate, graduates, PhD students, and so forth. In addition to our webinars, we have a microsite called consultingcareerconnection.com or .org, and this is a community-based platform where we incent people to blog, to find answers to burning questions, and so forth. And we welcome all of you to join us there and contribute and read about the wonderful opportunities in the profession of consulting. And the next picture is just simply a picture of that or a snapshot of the website itself, which doesn't seem to be coming up. There we go. So let's start the program with a few questions so we know who's on the phone. Have you ever worked in management consulting before? Yes, no, or as an intern? And please just type in your answer, submit it, and we'll see in a second what the experience is of the participants on the phone. And as suspected, most of you on the phone have never worked in consulting. A few of you have, and we have a couple of people who have worked as interns, not unexpectedly, and hopefully we will be able to answer a lot of your questions. So let's go to the next polling question. Where are you currently based? And again, please select one of them and click Submit. Although the majority seem to be in the Northeast USA, we do have a nice grouping around the Midwest, Southwest, as well as the Southeast, Northwest, and outside of the United States. But again, it appears to be primarily the Northeast. Good. Next question. What level of education have you most recently completed or are in the process of completing? Again, please submit your answers. Again, the majority seem to be graduate or master's programs, but we do have a number of undergraduates and even some PhDs. And as you'll hear in a little while, opportunities to start in consulting are spread across all educational levels, and we'll be discussing that in a moment. So our next question is, what is or was your major or concentration? and not unexpectedly, we have quite a lot of people doing business degrees. I assume these are MBAs. Obviously, quite a lot of people in the Northeast. So these are probably schools like Harvard, Wharton, Kellogg, which is more Midwest, and then some of the smaller schools like Amos Tuck and so forth, NYU, et cetera. So we will try to tailor our discussion a little bit along your interests, MBAs, but we also have, interestingly enough, some liberal arts, science, engineering, and IT technology. So we will hopefully be addressing all of your concerns. Okay. Next question. If you already have a job or will be starting work soon, what line of consulting business will you be or are you working in? Okay, with so many MBAs on the line, naturally strategy is quite heavily represented, but we also have a number of people going into the Big Four, what we call business advisory. A lot of other, which is great, because there are many, many, many opportunities to consult that aren't strategy or the Big Four. Have quite a number of people going to IT, which is good. Since Lexi is at IBM, she can certainly give you some insights there. Not so many in business forensics and focused specialty, but as I said, I think it's fascinating that we have a lot of people who are going into the category of other. And again, please feel free to ask any questions, and especially if you're going in an area that isn't particularly addressed in this presentation. The final question, to what extent has the consulting company where you'll be working prepared you for your job? Not at all, a little bit, a fair amount, extensively. Okay, not unexpectedly, the majority is saying a little bit, which is good. I hate to think that you're starting without some information, but there are quite a number of you on the phone who haven't gotten any information or haven't been informed, and that may be coming. And a number of you have actually gotten a fair amount of preparation from the firm you're starting at, and even a couple of you said extensively. So let's go to the next slide, which is the agenda. We have a rather packed agenda, so we'll be moving quickly. First, Eliana and Lexi will be introducing themselves and talk a little bit about their decisions. Project work is obviously the keystone of success in consulting, so I'm sure you'll want to hear about what the first year or two looks like with that. Evaluations, feedback are meant to really help you get started and understand where your strengths and weaknesses are that you can help you be more successful. Cultural issues, of course, are what really define a lot of the experience you will have at the firm that you'll be starting with. And then we'll talk a little bit about education and training and the longer-term prospects for advancement and development. So let's start with the introductions. As I said, we have two young ladies who started their careers about a year and a half, a little bit maybe longer, at two very well-known and important firms, Eliana Baker from FTI Consulting and Lexi Bohonen at IBM's Global Business Services. And we will now ask Eliana to introduce herself and say why she chose FTI Consulting.
Hi, my name is Eliana Baker. I am currently a consultant at FTI Consulting. A little bit of background information. I went to Colby College and Colby, which is a liberal arts school. I majored in mathematical sciences. I've always considered myself a very quantitative-minded person and enjoyed working with numbers. And as far as going into consulting, the aspect of consulting that always appealed to me was the ability to work on different projects where I'm constantly learning about different companies and industries and different ways to solve problems. I first became familiar with FTI Consulting in between my sophomore and junior years at college. I was actually an intern there. I became familiar with the company through personal contact. I was also looking at other opportunities that I looked at were interning at a few of the other Big Four firms. FTI presented me with a great intern opportunity in New York, and so I decided to take that. I actually interned there the summer after my sophomore and junior year and eventually accepted a job there, which I started in September of 2010. I guess FTI really appealed to me because of its size. It's a mid-sized company, and I was able to get to know many of the leading senior professionals and work with them on the project. I wasn't just working with people at my staff level.
Excellent. Thank you. And FTI, for those of you who don't know, is one of the big players in what we call business forensics. Again, we have several groups of what we call strategy firms, McKinsey, BCG, Bain, HR consultants, which are companies like Mercer, Towers Watson, Aon Hewitt. And then business forensics is another important vertical, FTI, Navigant. They do a lot of corporate finance, do a lot of restructuring reorganization, but also expert testimony in large legal cases and so forth. That's why we call it business forensics. I know a question has come up about how we define the Big Four. The Big Four are the Big Four accounting firms. So that's Deloitte, KPMG, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and Ernst & Young. They have all been aggressively building their advisory services lines of business and are growing very aggressively and coming back very, very strongly. And then, of course, we have a lot of the IT consultants, Capgemini, IBM, and so forth, which leads me now to Lexi, who is at one of the largest consulting firm globally, and again is known for its IT consulting, but it does other things as well. Lexi, do you want to talk about yourself and IBM?
Absolutely. Good afternoon, everyone. I just want to give a little precursor for the rest of the presentation. In case there's any background noise for me, I apologize. I was on client site and was unable to get a room, so just a heads up if there's any static, I'll go on mute as quick as I can. Sometimes there's random vacuums around me. But anyways.
It sounds very good, Lexi. I think
okay,
you're doing
good,
fine.
Good. So to introduce myself, I also studied at Colby College in Maine. Unlike Eliana, I was and always have been a very qualitative-minded person. I was a sociology major in college, and I never took any business classes while I was there, not even a math class. In college, I was an athlete. I played soccer, so I was pretty competitive throughout my life. And when it came time to look for a job, I really wasn't sure which direction I wanted to go. I knew I didn't want to pursue a master's or anything in the social sciences. I was considering maybe law school, but really wasn't sure, so I turned to consulting. IBM recruited at Colby, and I was lucky enough to get an interview and a job offers, and it was my first offer, so I took it. I was hired into the Global Business Service Public Sector Group, so it's also referred to as federal sector, and I'm in the Supply Chain Management Procurement Division. So that's a little bit about where I am now. I think for me it was less of a where do I want to go, more of in terms of a company, more of I knew consulting interested me, and IBM recruited at Colby, and so it lined up perfectly for me. So I think that's that.
Great, thank you. And for both of you, I know that in addition to lots of undergraduates, you are working side by side with MBA graduates, PhDs, and so forth. So I think the fact that you two both come from very different backgrounds, although the same school, it's just an indication of the depth of diversity and breadth of experience that our industry attracts and fosters in terms of careers. So with that, let's go on to project work. We are defining this a little bit as niche specialist versus generalist, which is really first how you're going to be confronted with how you're defined and how you define your work for projects. But there are obviously lots of other issues and interesting aspects of project work which we'll address. But we first just want to ask another question, and that would be, have you done significant project work in other positions you held prior to being a consultant? Good, and not unexpectedly, we would say obviously it's really some. A lot of you have done some work, project work. Certainly in many of your graduate programs and undergraduate programs, you are put into project teams for a variety of assignments. So you all basically have, with those of you, the 15% or so that haven't done any, have some indication what project work is like. And some of you even have done it almost exclusively in prior jobs. So with that, why don't we get started? And Lexi, would you want to tell us a little bit about your experience at IBM, and even beyond the whole question of a niche specialist versus a generalist?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned in my introduction, I am part of the public sector consulting group at IBM, and specifically I'm in the supply chain management procurement service area. So that's the group that I was hired into right off the bat, and that's where, as we'll get into down the road, where my management and my management lies there. However, when I started, like any other large consulting firm, they kind of throw you where they need you. We have what they call a bench, which I think everyone has a different term for it. But as I start, they pick new hires off the bench and put them on projects. So I was lucky enough to get onto a project right away when I started as a new hire onto a project with FEMA. So what IBM is doing is basically creating and developing an enterprise application system for FEMA, taking tons of disparate little applications that have been cropped up over the years, everything from grants, disaster tracking, financial systems, and whatnot. So to begin, I was my role on that project was as my title was strategic communications lead within the program management office. So our team is quite large. We have over 200 people on this project. So we have a separate PMO, as they call it. So I was working with both IBM executives and FEMA executives to, you know, streamline communication. However, I have now moved on to a new role. I am on the same project, but I am on one of these specific, what we call work orders, so working on two specific applications within our umbrella of projects. And I'm working with the OCFO team, financials, and the budget team at FEMA on a spend plan system and a financial tracking system. So in this role, I've learned more of the fundamental project management skills that I think will take me and can apply to not only the IT industry, but any industry that I will go in the future. So in that sense, I've gotten the general knowledge of project management. However, being on such an IT-heavy project, I've learned a lot of on the job, I've learned a lot of technical skills, learning more about databases and applications and all the inner workings of the applications that we're managing. So like I mentioned previously, I had no computer science or IT background, so it's been all on the job, and that is my kind of niche skill that I think I've developed.
Great, thank you. And Lexi, it sounds like you've already taken on quite a lot of responsibility in a number of areas, and you're already starting to look at project management skills and develop those. How does that compare with some of the MBAs that you've been working with or other graduate people with other graduate degrees?
Absolutely, yeah. I think I've been lucky met the right people and gotten aligned on this project with some people that were, you know, confident in me, but I think that the folks that have come on as MBAs just start a little bit further ahead down that path naturally because they have that experience that I didn't have coming in. So whereas I have been kind of put under a mentor and learned and have been in a supportive role, some of the other people on my project that I have seen have come in and started right away kind of in that mentor role once they get their feet under them. So I think that's what I would say in terms of that.
Great. And Eliana, tell us a little bit about your experience. Now, you were hired in mostly for very specialized knowledge, but you've been also sort of been growing in other ways.
Right. I was hired for an FTI, what we call FLC Core, and FLC stands for the segment, the consulting segment I am at FTI. That's Forensic and Litigation Consulting. So I was actually hired for the generalist area, or I guess I was hired as a generalist, but as time has gone on, I've worked primarily on cases for the intellectual property group, and there's several areas within FLC Core, such as IP and insurance, that require specialized knowledge and training, and some of the work that I've done on these IP cases requires knowledge of case law, decisions, and economic theory that deal exclusively with intellectual property cases and projects rather than other general projects within FLC Core. So as I've worked on more and more cases for this group, I guess I would consider myself somewhat of a niche specialist within the IP or within the consulting world for intellectual property matters. But I would also like to say that FGI, they've always been very open to younger consultants trying different areas if they do express interest. When I was hired for IP, I knew very little about what a patent actually was. But as time's gone on, I've enjoyed working with the group and learning about the IP world, and it's something I never really thought I would enjoy or become really interested in. So it's been a really good experience for me so far.
Excellent. And I'm sorry about the misunderstanding. Lexi, as she said, was hired sort of in a specialist group but has been developing as a generalist, whereas you were hired really into the general practice area and have quickly focused on an area as a specialist. So it becomes quite fluid, and I think we'll talk a little bit later about sort of directing your career. But my experience also as a consultant, and I think you're beginning to see that, is you can be highly directive about where you want to go. And also highly exploratory early in your career. Maybe Eliana, you can talk a little bit about ways you're sort of making your interests known and who you're talking to.
Definitely. Well, at least within the IP group, there's several meetings that our group exclusively has. We usually do them every month or so. It's to go over recent case decisions, talk about different IP economic theories for, I guess, the younger folk to learn about. And these meetings, you know, I regularly attend, and people who aren't as familiar with the IP work or what our group does but are within FLC Core, they're always invited and welcome to come if they express that interest. But that's something that I regularly attend, and at times I've even participated in the meetings and presented some of the things in conjunction with other people on the IP team. But I would say that it's been my experience that if you find something that interests you, people are very receptive and open to, and they want to know if you do want to try something different out. Especially when you're younger, you have lots of time, lots of flexibility, and you should always feel comfortable going even to a supervisor and letting them know that's something else, there might be something else you want to try.
Excellent. Thank you. I see we already have a number of questions coming in, so without further ado, Sally, can you start posing some of the questions?
Sure. Actually, this question piggybacks nicely with what you were just saying there, Eliana. Some person's asking, how responsive and flexible has your company been in dealing with specific requests, whether they be about travel, the type of work and projects you work on, working with friends, and that can be from your experience or other people that you know within your organization. Eliana, you want to start?
Sure, I'll begin. I would say that my company is extremely flexible. I mean, they want their employees to be happy, and from what I really have never put in a request to change groups or anything or to try different cases just because I've been really content with working in the intellectual property group. But other people that I've talked to who've had those experiences, it's been pretty easy for them once they go. And I think it's about feeling comfortable. And at first, people don't feel comfortable. It may not be well received. But I think in the end, what you'll realize is your supervisors want you to be happy. And when you're happy, you're going to do the best job you can do, and in the end, I think everyone that I've known, it's been a really seamless transition, and it's not been a problem at all, and I would say my experience has been pretty easy for them. And in terms of traveling and, I guess, the company, in my experience, and this might be, I might touch upon this later in the cultural issues, but if you have to be local or you need to be somewhere, or I would say if you're always direct with your supervisor and tell them up front, you know, I can't travel this day, or I'm not going to be able to be working for this week for whatever reason ahead of time. People really just want you to be comfortable and you to be happy. And if you give them a heads-up notice of what your personal situation might be or how you're feeling, it always ends up working a lot better than what you might imagine.
Great. And Lexi, how does that compare with your experience?
I think it, just because IBM is that much larger, it is a little bit more difficult to, at least at my level, to change around and move around. So for me, like I mentioned, I was hired into the supply chain procurement division, and while it's possible, I really haven't known anyone who's changed out of their service area. That's not to say that you can't get involved in project work that doesn't align with that group's pipeline. So, for example, right now I'm not the project I'm working on with SEMA has nothing. It doesn't have to do with supply chain management. So, in that sense, it's relatively easy to bump around to different projects, but it's all about networking and knowing the right people to pull you on. For me, my management per se hasn't had that much influence and doesn't really have that much influence on what I want and what I do. It's a lot about the availability of the projects that are up and where they need people. And again, about talking to the right people. So when the time comes that you are interested in making a change, that you have your ducks in order or whatever to make that change. So that's what I would say.
Okay. One more question, and we have a few more questions coming in, but they're actually going to apply a little bit further in the presentation. So we will address them in a little while. But one question is particular to you, Lexi. How does IBM's internal practice group differ from the other areas? Is it completely separate, and do they share the bench with other areas?
Okay, so I'm assuming by internal practice group they're referring to my group supply chain procurement. And if I'm wrong, correct me again and resubmit your question, and we can answer it. But the bench for supply chain procurement is a sole bench. There's not a one massive bench that applies across the federal practice. So each area has their own bench, and each area is concerned with staffing their own people. And like I said, when I started, I wasn't even staffed by my own group. I had already made contacts here at IBM with people who had graduated from Colby, actually. I had reached out before I started and was able to get staffed on a project through them. So I think that just goes to show that the networking and talking and putting yourself out there and trying to meet people that align with your interests that are working in an area that interests you, I think that is the most important. But in terms of the bench, like I said, each area has their own bench.
Okay, thanks, guys. Okay, let's move on in the agenda.
Okay, thank you. And as I said, or as Sally mentioned, we will be addressing as many of the questions as possible in the right area. So we're going to move on to evaluations and feedback. And as many of you who have worked before know, this is, you know, the best way for you to manage your career and understand what you have to do more of and perhaps do less of. So have your evaluations and feedback in the past been more qualitative, quantitative, or a mixture of both? Okay. Not unexpectedly, the majority say a mixture of both. But quite a number of you have been in situations where it's really been more qualitative. And obviously this has something to do with how large an organization is. Smaller companies tend to be a little bit more qualitative because it's easier to manage. Bigger firms rely on often a lot of quantitative metrics simply because if you've got thousands of people you're evaluating, you need to find some common standard. But it seems that the bulk of you who are on the phone really saw a mixture of both, which is as you can expect, also the case in the consulting industry. So let's move on, and let's talk a little bit about the evaluations and feedback. And Eliana, if you would like to start and tell us about your experience at FTI and their systems, that would be great.
Okay, so I would say that FTI is a good mixture of both quantitative and qualitative when it comes to evaluations and goals. So what I guess to begin, goals are done annually, and they're done under the guidance of a performance manager and of every single employee, I guess, at under a certain level has a performance manager, and it's sort of a formal career mentor that's possibly two levels above me, but it normally begins in sort of this ongoing two-way discussion between myself and my performance manager, which I also call my PM. The way I set my goals is I look to the competencies required for the next level. So I would look for the competencies required for a senior consultant. And the way that FTI does our goals is they're done under three categories: building the business. So, for instance, what do I do to support and grow FTI's business? And, for example, a goal that falls under this category might be, I want to be 85% utilized this year. The second category is building relationships. What do I do to maintain, develop, build relationships with clients, team members, et cetera? So an example of a goal that would fall under this category would be engage in one sales or marketing event, maybe IP-specific, every 6 months. The third category of goals, building the organization. What do I do to ensure the ongoing strength of and growth of the people who make up FTI? And, for example, this might be a goal might be doing a training course at FTI University or attending one recruiting event. So our goals are assessed at interim and year end, and I guess the way that they're assessed are we're given overall performance rating by our performance manager, and there's four, it's out of four categories: unacceptable, developing, successful, or exceptional. And I guess one thing I would like to make, I'd like, something that I've learned this past year and a half is it is so easier and so much better, especially tracking your progression when you set goals and performance measures that are easy to measure. So instead of saying, I did, you know, a good job at this, make your goal easy to measure. I attended X many events. This has been something that that has made my life a lot easier, especially when you have to assess your goals periodically. So we're also given project evaluations and feedback, and these engagement evaluations are completed for every project that we work over 100 hours on. And we're assessed against two types of competencies: core competencies, which are knowledge and behaviors that apply to everyone. Example of these might be accountability, communication skills, time management. So everyone at every level is assessed with these core competencies, and it doesn't necessarily mean that a senior consultant will be better at a core competency than a consultant. These are just general behaviors that apply to everyone. And then the second category is functional competencies, and these are skills needed to perform a particular job. So these change by the functional competencies required for a consultant would obviously be different for functional competencies required for a director. And these include your skills such as financial statement analysis or financial modeling. And we're also given the same overall performance rating by our supervisor, which is unacceptable, developing, successful, or exceptional. And I guess in terms of promotion opportunities and advancement, FTI definitely doesn't just look at how long you've been there, but they like to see that you have progressed with your goals, that you've also that not only have your goals reflected the type of you want to do, but that you're actually progressing in your goals. And I would say that there's six levels of staff at FTI. There's consultant, senior consultant, director, senior director,
managing director and senior managing director. I guess at the consultant level, the promotions typically occur around the 2 to 3 year level mark, but they really do depend on the work you perform and the your engagement evaluations and how well you progress on your goals.
Great, thank you. Lexi, why don't we turn to you, because we do still have quite a lot to cover.
Absolutely. So similar to Eliana, we begin our goal setting at the beginning of each year. We call them the personal business commitments. And unlike Eliana, these are pretty much given to us regardless of your level. So I, from my service area manager, who is part of the supply chain division that I'm in, I am given the same as all the other consultants, kind of a block of goals for the year. They include a utilization target, a number of business development hours that we're required to complete, you know, other usual goals. And then we are given the ability to add in development goals. So if we aspire to complete a certain training or any certification throughout the year, we have the ability to add those in. However, it is the difference between, I think, Eliana and me is that it is pretty set up for me. So throughout the year, I am like Eliana, required to do two project assessments. So for me, I've been on the same project for the whole time I've been with IBM. So I do one in June and I do one at the end of the year. If you're on multiple engagements, it is the same. It's a 100-hour minimum. If you are on a project for 100 hours, you do a PA. We call them PAs. So the PA rating is done by your team, the people you work with day to day, and you write to that, and it's reviewed and sent to your service area. The PBC, which is the personal business commitment that we set at the beginning of the year, is then assessed at the end of the year. And the way that's done is your project assessments, however many you have, are taken into consideration, as well as any additional work, client feedback, things like that that you have done, certifications that you've completed. And I submit, in addition, another proof, I would say, of or a write to my goals to show how I've demonstrated and achieved them for the year. All of that is taken to a panel. So my service area, specifically procurement, the management team lays out each member at my level within our area and looks at what they've done for the year, how they've achieved their goals and whatnot, and that we are then given a quantitative rating for the year. It goes from 1 being the best, 4 being the worst, and it's a bell curve, and our growth-driven profit is based off of that quantitative rating. So that's the high-level rating system. In terms of promotions, similar to Eliana, IBM, it happens for the base level, we go in bands. So we go band 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then they call it our C-suite, and there's rankings within the executives. And to go from band 6 to 7, it is about a two-year mark. For an MBA student, you would most likely come in at a band 7 or an 8 and going upwards. But the promotion and advancement process, I'm going to be honest, it's quite laborious. It's a lot of writing, and you go through a lot of different panels, subject matter expert panels, and then management approvals, and then you go to another final panel where they rank you and decide who's within the service area is to be promoted. So overall, pretty quantitative rating. There's opportunities for qualitative feedback, mostly if requested, but just because of the size of IBM, it is pretty quantitative in nature.
Great, thank you. And I see we've got quite a number of questions coming in. So, Sally, would you pose a couple of them, please?
Sure. How about this one? Do you feel the pressure to advance? Does the culture promote up or out mentality? Eliana?
I definitely feel that there's a pressure to advance, especially at, you know, a consultant level, because promotions are done usually on a 2 to 3 year level. Especially because at FTI we're hired, I was hired in a class of maybe 6 or 7 consultants, and usually it's like that every year. And so because you know the people that you're hired with and it's a small group, I definitely think that there is some pressure just size-wise, knowing, you know, you don't want to be the only one who doesn't get a promotion every year or, you know, for a senior consultant level. But I definitely think that there is some pressure there, maybe because of the size.
Thanks. Lexi?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. As a result of the, like I said, the bell curve rating system we have here, if you're not receiving a high rating, you do feel the pressure. And also because of the size, I think large or small, especially with IBM being so large, it's so competitive. People can fill the seats all the time. So if they see you slipping behind, it's not where you want to be. We'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I just add in something, Sally.
If
for the upper out policies, the most active in terms of enforcing upper out policies are the big strategy firms. That is well known. If you are going to a McKinsey, a Bain, a BCG, and some of the others, you will be confronted with that pretty quickly. But there's also a method to that madness. Because they're so well known and you get such great training there, if unfortunately you move out for whatever reason, and of course it may be your decision, you'll find that you're helped with an amazing network and you'll probably be facilitated into an appropriate opportunity for you that fits your skill sets and what you want to do. So even though it may sound scary, it's actually in some ways a blessing in disguise. But those are the ones that have the most explicit upper out policies. Sorry.
Thanks, John. And Eliana, when you were talking about your promotional opportunities and advancement, you also mentioned then kind of career path at FTI. And we have a question here, so maybe, Lexi, you could give the perspective of IBM. What is the career path like, and what comes after consultant?
Okay, so for us, Eliana mentioned it goes consultant, senior consultant, and sorry, I can't remember past then, but similarly, it's banded, like I mentioned for us. So I'm a quote-unquote consultant as a band 6, and that's where new hires come in. I'm currently waiting for news on my promotion to band 7, which I will be called a senior consultant. And then from band 7 through 10, the senior consultant lingo or a title is associated with those individuals. Once with each step, with each promotion in band level comes more responsibility, obviously, a lot more, for the most part, as you go up, a lot more business development work is required. So that, I would say, in general, that's how you travel up. Not in general, that's the only way you travel up, is by applying for these promotions every 2 to 3 years.
John, do we have time for more questions, or should we move on?
I noticed that some of them are a little more general, so let's actually try to get through the topics. And if we have time, we can come back and ask some of the more general questions. Let's go on to culture, because this really is very important. I see even that we've gotten a few questions about culture. So how important is culture, the culture of the firm you're working for, to you? And I'm glad to see that the bulk of you are saying a lot and some of you are saying somewhat. This is, as you can imagine, one of the most important things when you're interviewing with a firm, but also when you're working with a firm. A lot of your happiness and therefore your success is going to be predicated on, quote-unquote, a fit with the culture. Now, that said, of course, it's very hard to define sometimes, and sometimes you just know in your gut if it's right or wrong. But we'll try to explore it a little bit more in depth. And why don't we start with Lexi?
Yeah. So, like most of you know, and we've talked about, IBM is an enormous company. And so for me, in the beginning when I first was hired, I you know, had this grand idea. It's, there's, you know, even if I don't like what I'm doing to start, there's so much out there. IBM has a hand in almost anything you can think of. And it is not just IT and computers and mainframes. So, on that note, there is so much to offer at IBM, and there are so many different ways that you can take your career, and it might not always be the easiest, and it might take you a while to get there, to transfer and move around, but there's so much going on, and there's so many opportunities for you to start something if it isn't already going on. You just need to network and meet the right people and get that support. So in that sense, it's a great place to be if you're not certain about what direction you want to take. And even if you are certain that there's something that IBM is focused on, you know, that's, it's also great there. So in my experience as a new hire and an undergrad, I've had a great work-life balance. I think that being in the federal sector area is a little bit different just because we are working with government clients, and you know, we have government holidays. We can't be in government offices on those days. So it's not the corporate world. However, working with the government in on a government project adds a whole other level of complexity, especially when it comes to unpredictability with funding and Congress changes and whatnot. So the culture there, I think, has been a really good experience for me. If I do transfer over into the private sector, just to have that experience of unpredictability has been really great for me. In terms of actual, coworker relationships and whatnot, IBM does do a ton of stuff. There's tons of community service opportunities, happy hour networking events, training opportunities, and we'll get into that. So there's so much to offer, and sometimes it is overwhelming just because there isn't someone there all the time sending you an email reminding you of what's out there. You have to go and find it. They're not going to hold your hand. So in that sense, you are a little fish in the big sea. Like I said, no one's going to hold your hand and pat your back through it, but there is, if you're willing to step out of your shell, there's so much to do and get involved in. In terms of our mentoring program, we do have a formal mentoring program. Upon acceptance, whether you're a new hire or an experienced hire, each individual is assigned a mentor, a peer buddy, and that group works together and helps the new hire through the transition process to IBM, the little nuts and bolts, and also just, you know, support through the transition. For me, I'd say I have gotten the most advice and support with my actual project team, and a little different than others, I have been on the same project working with the same team for almost two years now. So I think I've built relationships there, and those are the people that I've found the most support with. But there's certainly there's tons of support networks and individuals out there who do want to see you succeed. So like I said, I think the takeaway here is, if you allow yourself to feel like a small fish in the big sea, you will. It's just about being active and getting out there and putting yourself out there and getting involved to mitigate.
And do
that.
You see any difference, Lexi, between the federal practice and the commercial sector at IBM?
Definitely. Again, I can't speak too much from experience because I'm not part of that, but it's a complete divide. And people often say that it's trying to switch into the private sector, a part of GBS is like going to another company just because they develop us here. There's a lot of training that I've gotten that is specific to the federal sector. And so they try to keep you here, to the best that they can, obviously. But just in terms of culture, I think the people are the same. It's just that the environment that you're working in is definitely a lot different. So that definitely dictates the way in which project teams work together and such.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. And let's go on to Eliana.
Okay, so I work in event-driven consulting, and in the FLC practice, that usually means that we're retained during the litigation process.
So there's definitely a certain unpredictability. You can't really plan long-term what kind of projects you're going to be working on in the next 6 months, because a lot of things surface as FGI is retained in the process of litigation. I guess, you know, it's just my experience has been if you communicate with your team members or supervisors about your upcoming planned vacations, events, doctor's appointments, whatnot, and you let them know ahead of time, I'll be out this day, there's never a problem. And no one's going to ask you to push back your holiday or a wedding or, you know, a significant event. People understand that. And when you give them a heads up, it's always fine. I guess in terms of work life or life outside of the office with your coworkers, FTI offers a lot of opportunities to develop these relationships with coworkers outside the office. And FTI has several sports teams. They sponsor several community service projects. I know in the New York office, we always have a New York Cares team. I've been also part of a community service project where I read with several other FTI members to a buddy every week at the public school nearby. FTI also offers social events where you can get to know your coworkers. And then I guess in terms of mentoring, like I said before, we're all assigned a performance manager, and these people are really great to advise you on your goals, evaluations, other career-related aspects. Entry-level consultants and interns are assigned a buddy to help ease their transition into FTI, and this is usually someone who's 1 to 3 years ahead of a new consultant. They're a good resource to ask some of the more logistical day-to-day questions. And then as far as informal mentors, I've developed a lot of trusting relationships with these people through working on various team projects. And like Lexi said, when you're working with these people for, you know, a significant amount of time, you really do begin to trust these people. And they're great resources to go to when I really don't know who to direct a specific question to. And, you know, it's always important to upkeep and maintain these relationships, even if you're working on a different project. So to make sure that you check in with these people every now and then and let them know how you're doing and what you're up to.
Excellent. Thank you. And Sally, I think we have a couple of questions for the cultural side of the equation.
Sure. One question, it's an interesting one, says, I've worked in India as a management consultant. What are some of the nuances of consulting in the U.S.? This is something that both of you could answer, and John, you might even be able to sprinkle some words of wisdom in there, too. Want to start? John, why don't you kick us off, and then Lexi and Eliana can piggyback to your comments.
Yeah. I've worked in a number of countries, a lot of the European countries as a consultant, also Japan. I've gotten to know India less as a consultant, as more as the head of this organization. Certainly, Americans have certain cultural values that are much different than Indians. Indians, in general, the industry reflects also the education. Indian education lays a lot more emphasis on engineering and more technical skills than perhaps in the U.S., although U.S., of course, is a leader in innovation. But in the consulting industry, Americans, as we say, our industry is much more diverse and broad, and therefore you also have just a very varied and broad set of people that you're interfacing with. So you have to be very good with diversity and comfortable with that. In fact, as you get as you progress, you have to actually demonstrate that you can deal with diversity of gender, but also of ethnicity and so forth, sexual preference, all that stuff comes to play. You don't have that quite in India. It's, again, not a so diverse population. There are other cultural norms that would trump diversity. And that's probably one of the big differences. And as I said, you'll find that a lot of consulting in the U.S. will be on softer issues, non-technical issues, such as HR issues or political consulting and so forth, whereas so much of India is still very much related to IT systems and so forth. Now, I don't know if that fully answers the question, but that has sort of been my experience. I don't know, Eliana and Lexi, if you had anything to add to that.
This is Lexi. I don't have too much to add, except for the fact that I think IBM, being a global company, there are there is a ton of diversity within. And I think that that might be different than some other firms. I find that diversity in every sense of the word, gender, background, educational background, experience. I don't think that there's any, myself as a perfect example, I was a liberal arts sociology major and I'm working on an IT project. I think there's, if you can get the work done, you're going to learn the skills you need. So that's in terms of, that's what I would say has been my experience.
I think we're actually going to have to move on, otherwise we're not going to get finished with everything. Sorry about that. But let's move on to the education and training. And here again, there are two aspects of this. There's on-the-job training, and then there's the more formal program. So why, if you would please answer the question, which you respond better to. And in general, we find people really like a mixture of both, but the more formal education, many of which you have already you're either absolving or finishing right now or have already, and so I think a number of you are looking for on-the-job training, which of course you get a lot of, as we've already heard. But let's talk about this for a couple of minutes. Eliana?
Okay, so I got the first training that I was introduced to at FDI's new hire training. This usually takes place at a conference center, and the length really varies on the practice area that you're hired into. Generally, we're learning what is FDI, what does the company do, what is our individual role. So, like my individual role in the FLC segment of FDI. We also learn during this time about setting measurable goals, which, as I said before, was like a really important thing for me to learn about. And then FTI University, this is a 2 to 3 day full-time course during the summer. The courses are catered to specific staff levels. They're taught by FTI professionals, which is a good way to meet senior-level professionals from various parts of the country. Examples of this might be damages modeling or report writing. I took a damages modeling class. It was a 2.5 day class last summer in Virginia at FTI, and another good opportunity to meet FTI consultants from around the country, not just the New York office. We also have lunch and learns at FTI, which are 1 hour training information sessions on various topics within the FLC segment. I also mentioned before the IT group has these monthly meetings, which are 2 to 3 hour meetings on IT related topics or cases. We also are given access to take classes through online access, and this is something that I've done in the past when I'm not 100% billable. It's 4 to 8 hour classes online, and a few examples might be Excel or how to use Microsoft Excel pivot tables or functions or how to use Microsoft Access. As far as informal training, the majority of learned knowledge at FTI definitely comes from on-the-job training. I have utilized it to provide me with templates or past examples to accomplish an assignment when I'm familiar with the assignment as a starting point. And like we said at FTI, like we've discussed before, the consultants come from a broad range of backgrounds, so A lot of the training comes from on-the-job training, and I definitely found it helpful to go ask people for prior examples or, you know, templates given a task that I'm unfamiliar with.
Great, thank you. One word here. I'm seeing a number of questions that are about getting into consulting or finding a job. These are not addressed on this webinar. They will be addressed in the webinars that we do in the fall, which is when most of you are looking for jobs. So please be aware this is not what this webinar – this is a webinar for people who have started or have a job and are about to start, not who are looking for a position. So with that, let me send this ask Lexi now for her insights about education and training.
So, similar to Eliana, IBM does host and have thousands of courses available. We have the IBM Internet. There's, you know, courses that are accessible through there that are self-study. There's, in addition, a weekly email that goes out. For me, it's public sector specific, but private sector has their own that announces in-person trainings in my area. I'm currently in Washington, D.C., and so the training addresses in-person trainings for the week that are in my area. In addition, there's plenty of opportunities for external certifications outside of the IBM world. I currently am working on a certified associate in project management training that's offered through PMI, and I was able to get funding through my service area for that. So, you know, courses like that, there's certainly available funding for, like anything else, is pretty competitive, but, it is there. In addition, like Eliana mentioned, we have lunch and learns, and the lunch and learns are mostly focused on meeting with the executives within the public sector and discussing. It's less training; it's more discussing current topics and strategy. So that I guess that might be one difference. In terms of informal training, for me, informal training has been the most effective way to, like I say here, get smart fast. So I knew nothing about databases and applications, and I was thrown into the mix and learned fast. So as long as, like I think Elion also mentioned, you're upfront and honest about what you know and what you don't know. I think for me the biggest lesson was don't sit back and pretend that you know, because then people assume that you know, and that's not where you want to be. So for me it's just, I think my biggest lesson was speaking up, putting it out there, saying, hey, I really don't understand this, and there's always going to be someone there to support you and make sure you understand or get you to a place where you can understand. So for me, as a sociology major, no business background, I have found success, and I think I have learned the skills that I need to know to be good at my job, since I've started here. So.
Great, thank you. And in the we've opened overstepped the hour, and if you have just a couple more minutes, we'd like to just address the last question about the longer term prospects for advancement and development. We obviously don't have time for any more questions, but we would urge all those on the phone to please go to our website to ask your questions and to blog and to read what's up there, because a lot of the questions that we weren't able to address should be addressed on the website. But Lexi, why don't you start very quickly about sort of longer term prospects?
Yeah, so for me, the major takeaway and my personal experience has been that consulting in the industry provides fundamental skills that are transferable to many different industries, regardless of what you see for yourself in the future. So teamwork is essential. Being able to work hard and be self-sufficient as an individual, but also know your place on a team. As a college athlete, I think that was one of my strengths, and that's what I brought to my job. So that is a really, really fundamental part of being successful. In addition, I think just learning how to handle a client, the services industry, knowing how to deal with different personalities and learning those different skills, that can be taken to any job. So for me, getting into the industry, I was unsure about what I wanted to do, and it was a great place to start for those very reasons.
Excellent. Eliana?
As far as longer-term prospects go, I plan to take the CFE exam, that's the Certified Fraud Examiner exam, by year-end. Lots of consultants or senior consultants at FTI end up doing that. It's an accreditation, and it also offers several networking opportunities through the Association of CFEs. I've always considered the MBA option. It's something that, you know, I've played around with, but, you know, I'm not really sure what will happen next, but I do know that I really do enjoy working on intellectual property matters at FTI, and this is something that I talked about in the beginning. It wasn't something that I had any experience in, and it was something I think I was maybe arbitrarily put on a project with the IP group, and since then, it's really become something that I'm extremely interested in, and I think that no matter what I, or something that I'd like to do is whether or not I'm at FTI in the future or whether or not I'm specifically in consulting, working at FTI in this group has definitely opened my eyes to what intellectual property is, and I hope to somehow always have that, you know, be part of the intellectual property world in my future endeavors.
Excellent. As I said, we've overstepped our time, so I want to thank you very much, Lexi and Eliana. As I mentioned before, again, any questions, you should submit them to the burning section, burning questions section of our website. As I said, there have been quite a lot of questions around the whole issue around getting a job, skill sets required for being hired, and so forth. These were not addressed in this webinar. This was for those of you who already have a job or are about to start. But those questions will be addressed in our fall webinars, so please look for that schedule. You will be contacted either by your career officers or you'll be getting emails from us about the upcoming webinars in September, October, November, December. And again, many, many thanks to Lexi and Eliana. This was an excellent discussion presentation. And otherwise, we look forward to seeing you at other webinars. Have a good day.
The conference has been muted. Thank you. Please stand by.